Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Go For It. I am your host, Paul Gannon. For the next 2 hours, we will be talking sports and having fun doing it. I want all your ideas, all your opinions, and all your beliefs. Of course, as always, you will get a heavy dose of my opinion. If you have an opinion, the number to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/pgant. That's blogtalkradio.com/pgant. You can send messages to the show on Twitter at GoForItGant. You send it, I'll read it on air, and we'll talk about it. Scheduled today to be joined by Basketball Wise four-star Keisha Nichols, and Keisha's actually the former fiance of San Antonio Spurs forward Richard Jefferson. So Keisha's going to come on and talk about the show and some of the things that's going on with her outside of the show. Also going to be joined by Andrew Datko of Florida State, and Andrew is preparing for the upcoming NFL draft, and he's getting ready to go, and he's preparing for the combine, which is next week. So we're going to be joined by him as well. And also Matt Blanchard of Wisconsin Whitewater, quarterback, and he's preparing for the NFL draft as well, getting himself ready to go. The NFL draft is right around the corner, ladies and gentlemen, and these guys are preparing for the draft. And also we're going to be joined by the newest member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame, newest enshrinee in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, the one, the only, Willie Ralph. So we got a great, great show for you today. Make sure you stick around. Make sure you listen. It's going to be fun. It's going to be enjoyable. It's going to be a good old time. And I want to start right now in New York City, and I got to start with my man, Jeremy Lin, Linsanity. It's Linsane. It's ridiculous what's going on with this guy and what's going on with the New York Knicks. I mean, the guy, Jeremy Lin, has just been playing out of this world. And it just, this is the thing that it just came out of nowhere. It truly came out of nowhere. No one expected this. And you got people, you got a lot of people coming out now with all the regrets. Oh, I wish I would have had this guy. I wish I would have kept him. I wish I would have did this. I wish I would have done that. But Jeremy Lin, out of nowhere, has elevated himself in a lot of ways. Linsanity, I was reading the other day, where he went up to like 1 million followers on the Chinese version of Twitter, and it didn't take long for him to do that. I think, I don't know the exact number, but he went from a small number all the way to 1 million. And the guy, he just came out of nowhere, Jeremy Lin. This is an amazing story, how this guy came out of nowhere, cut by various teams, playing in the D League. And now he is playing at Madison Square Garden. Madison Square Garden with the New York Knicks. And he is the reason that the Knicks are now in the playoffs. He is the reason that the Knicks have won 7 of the last 8 games. Him, his play, what he has done throughout the course of these 8 games. 24 points per game. Getting everyone involved. Getting to the lane at will. I mean, the guy had 38 points against Kobe and the Lakers. Now, you can talk, and there are some things you can look at this situation. You can say, you know what, okay, the Knicks, who have they played during this streak? Who have they played during this time that Jeremy Lin has went off? Who have they played? Well, I look at it, they beat teams like Sacramento, teams like Toronto, teams like Minnesota, those type of teams. They did beat teams. Well, a team, the Lakers, And that is the only team they've beaten. That is the only team they have beaten that is above 500. The only team that they have beaten above 500 is the Los Angeles Lakers. That's the only team. That is the only team they have beaten above 500 during Linsanity. That's it. That's it. The only team is the Los Angeles Lakers. Still, and you could talk about his turnovers. I mean, averaging close to 6 turnovers a game during this run. You can talk about that as well. But I think you got to talk about what he has done. I think you have to talk about how he has elevated the New York Knicks. And this is almost Tebow-like in a lot of ways. I mean, just the hysteria that is going on with this guy. This is almost Tebow-like. This is Tebow-like. This is Tebow-like hysteria for this guy, Jeremy Lin. And he really did come out of nowhere. He truly came out of nowhere. Nowhere. He came out of nowhere. But Jeremy Lin, and coming out of nowhere, is now everywhere. Everywhere you turn, everywhere you go, just like the Tebow situation. Just like Tim Tebow, everywhere you turned, everywhere you went, everywhere you go, everybody's talking about it. Jeremy Lin jerseys are popping up, selling like hotcakes at this point. I mean, his jerseys are selling like hotcakes. I mean, it's been an amazing story, Jeremy Lin. It's just been a flat-out amazing story. And you can make an argument that this story is bigger than Tebow because of his descent. He is of Asian descent. So this is now going worldwide. This is now going worldwide. Everybody throughout the world is talking about Jeremy Lin. Everybody is talking about Jeremy Lin, not only in the States, but around the world. Around the world, we're talking about Jeremy Lin and the things that he's doing and that he's done right now. He is playing amazing basketball. He's playing amazing basketball right now, and the New York Knicks are the benefit of it. And he is the benefit of it because he's doing it in New York City. He's doing it in New York City. It's one thing to do it in Houston. It's another place. It's another thing to do it in Minnesota. But he is doing it in New York City. And in doing it in New York City, the spotlight, that big spotlight, he has that platform. And now, with that platform that he has, New York City. So you know they're going to blow it up. You know they're going to blow it up. It's New York City. It is New York City. So you know they're going to blow it up. You know they're going to blow it up. And they've blown this story way out. Way, 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 way out. They blew it out. Way out. Like Tebow. Like the Tebow thing. But this story is an amazing story. And the reality is Jeremy Lin is the reason the Knicks are now in the playoffs. It's the reason if the season were to end today. And it's the reason that the Knicks were 7-1 over the last 8 games. They lost last night to the New Orleans Hornets. But this is all possible because of Jeremy Lin. And and that's the difference between Tebow and Lin. You can make the argument that Tebow was not the guy and not the true sole reason that the Denver Broncos ultimately went on a big winning streak and ultimately made it to the playoffs. You can make the argument that the defense was a bigger reason than Tebow. You can make that argument. You can't really make that argument here for Jeremy Lin. He is the reason that the New York Knicks are where they're at right now, and that is in the playoffs if the season were to end today. The question becomes now, Melo's coming back. Stoudemire has already returned. They signed J.R. Smith. What happens now? I mean, what happens now with all that? And I think it's going to be okay. Melo's a talented guy. Melo's a talented guy. Stoudemire's a talented guy. And J.R. Smith, who they recently signed, has talent as well. It's a talented team. We'll see what happens in terms of the chemistry. Jeremy, how are you, sir?
My name's never been doing better, Paul. You
know? That's very true, very true.
I heard you talking all the hype. You sound like you're from New York. I know that you claim that you are sometimes, and that you have the ability to be from New York and Philadelphia at the same time. But I don't know. I got to tell you, UC's playing some unbelievable basketball. I think that's a New York state of mind, Paul. He's playing basketball. I wouldn't say it's unbelievable.
It's very unbelievable. It's a very unbelievable thing, and we'll see what happens with this Linsanity moving forward, but it's been Linsane, and it's been ridiculous talking about Jeremy Lin and all the crazy things he has done throughout the course of the season and to this point. But let's bring in now a guy preparing for the NFL draft, a guy getting himself right and ready for the NFL draft, Wisconsin Whitewater star quarterback, Matt Blanchard. Matt, how are you, sir?
I'm doing good, Paul. How are you doing?
Doing well. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
And Matt, you've been working out in Tampa right now, working out with guys such as former wide receiver Yo Murphy as you prepare for the draft. Take us through a daily day in the life of Matt Blanchard as he prepares for the draft.
Yeah, we're down here working really hard in Florida. A typical day is – get up, eat a good breakfast around 7, get into the gym probably between 9:30 and 10. Then we head to the field. We throw routes, 3 or 4 days a week. If we're not throwing routes to receivers, then we're doing target work, working on accuracy, working on footwork, all the stuff, you need to get ready to be a great quarterback. And then, we have a couple hours off, grab some lunch, and then we team back up with Yo in the weight room or on the beach working in the sand for speed work, trying to, build that endurance, build that lower body strength. And then normally we'll have off. Sometimes we throw some flexibility work in there, but it's a 12-hour ordeal to get ready every single day.
And you say the day starts at 7:30. What time does this day end? I mean, there's a lot of stuff you guys are doing.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on. It's all necessary, really, to get your body ready for the things you're going to be doing, not just, for the combine or pro days, but really for the mini camps coming up. Mini camps come up quick, and, your body's got to be ready for it. But the day typically ends, probably around 4 o'clock, I'd say, when we start to wind down and get ready for the next one.
And in Tampa, you're around other guys preparing for the draft. Being around other players that are preparing for the draft like you are, does that push you? Does that push you to train a little harder or be your best being around all the other guys?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's kind of nice. You got guys going through the same process as you are. And really, it's just fun to compete every day. That's why you play this game. That's why you play any sport, is the ability to compete. And the fact that we get to do that with our training, it makes you that much better. It makes you work that much harder. Not only that there's guys that are training for combines or pro days, but it's guys who are already in the league or guys who have been there. So you pick up a lot of advice. You talk with a lot of people, and you get a lot of great insight about this whole process.
And Matt, a few weeks ago, you played in the All-Star game. You were one of the few Division III players there in that game, and in that game you passed for 48 yards, had one touchdown, one interception. How would you rate your play in that game?
I thought I did really well. I thought, I made the most of the opportunities that I was given. Unfortunately, threw an interception, but, it's kind of a whirlwind to get a handle on the playbook, on things going on. I thought I did really well at that. The first series I got in, drove the ball down the field and capped it off with a touchdown pass right at the end of the first half, which was great. Gave me a lot of great confidence going forward. And, the the practices, you know, were probably just as important as the game was. You know, with all the scouts that were there and all the teams that were there, you know, it was important to showcase what you can do during practice as well. And I thought I did the things I needed to do to kind of showcase my abilities and showcase my talents.
And, Matt, being that you played on the Division III level, did you feel like you had to do a little more during those practices and during that game?
You know, at first going into the week, I felt that, you know, I might have to do some of those things. But really, as the week progressed and the week went on, it kind of validated, you know, my stock heading into the draft and heading into things going forward. You know, I felt really comfortable. I felt that, you know, I could play with these guys, play with some of the top talent in the draft. And, you know, it really, like I said, was just a very validating experience. You know, like you said, being from a D3, you know, you would expect, you know, me having to do some more things. But really, I used that D3 card as playing with a chip on my shoulder, playing like I have something to prove. It just adds a different element, different mindset to my game. But really, it was just it was a great experience, and it was very validating.
So Matt, you know, look, a current guy like Jeremy Lin coming out of a school like Harvard and has this great success, how is a guy like that, and you had mentioned a D3 school, how's that motivating you right now?
Well, you know, it's just like anything in life. You know, you got to work hard at your craft. And, you know, just like Jeremy Lin did and just like I'm doing right now, you know, you work extremely hard to get in position where you have opportunities. And then once you get in those opportunities and once you have a chance, you got to seize those. You got to seize those opportunities. And that's what Jeremy Lin's doing right now. You know, he's getting a chance to start for the first time, and he's doing outstanding. And, you know, that's something that I look forward when I move forward here to get into a mini camp, hopefully, and you know, get a shot to play with an NFL team is, you know, my opportunities are going to come, and, you know, I'm going to have to seize those, which I plan on doing.
We're talking to Wisconsin Whitewater quarterback Matt Blanchard as he prepares for the upcoming NFL draft. And Matt, we talked about Wisconsin Whitewater being that it is Division III. A lot of people may not have seen you play. How would you describe your game to people that have not seen you play?
Yeah, I think my game is really based off, you know, being a smart quarterback, being a good decision maker. You know, I'm a pretty good athlete, so I use my feet at times at Whitewater. I didn't rely on it, but you know, my arm strength is very, very good, and you know, I think it's combining all those elements together, it's just, you know, understanding what the defense is trying to do, understand what your offense is trying to accomplish, and really just understanding the game all goes into, you know, my individual performance. You know, I threw, you know, 4 interceptions this past season. You know, so it kind of displays that, you know, I make good decisions. I understand schemes, defenses, stuff like that. And I think that's extremely important in the NFL gameplay. You know, it's you know, not always the biggest, the strongest guys that succeed, but a lot of the times it's the smartest guys. So I put myself in that category as someone who has a really high football IQ and is a student of the game and tries to learn more every day.
And one thing, Matt, I know that you are as a winner. You were 25-0 as a starter at Wisconsin Whitewater. I mean, all you do and all you have done is win, 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 win. But, I mean, you haven't lost in a long time. I mean, how's it feel to lose?
I don't know. That's a great question. I haven't felt that in a very long time, and I'm blessed in that sense to have great teammates and you know, have great coaches around me to support that record. And it's honestly been a fun ride at Whitewater to win 3 national championships total, and you know, not lose a single football game since I was there. You know, you get sort of spoiled at times. You know, with each playoff win, but it's you know, the expectations get higher every single year, and it's kind of nice because, you know, playing with those high expectations, it puts a little more pressure into everything, and it's something that I really enjoy.
And Matt, have you heard anything of where you may go in this draft, or will you have to take the free agency route? I mean, have you heard anything at this point?
We've heard some things. Had a lot of interviews over the All-Star Classic in Little Rock, but really, just keeping everything close to the vest right now. We'll see what happens in the draft coming up in April, and we'll see what happens in the free agency period. But, right now, just keeping everything in perspective, keeping, everything open, and really just controlling what I can control. And that's my workouts every day, and it's how I approach mentally every day. And I'll let, my agent and let, the whole draft process take care of itself.
Well, Matt, you had talked earlier about, playing with a little bit of a chip on the shoulder. And I'm sure going into the draft, and the book certainly will be of a critical book. You play at D3 level. Do you have the skills to be now transferred from D3 to the NFL? And how do guys like Aaron Rodgers motivate you in that continuing to play with that chip on the shoulder when you get to that next level?
Yeah, I believe I do have the ability to play. I showcased it at the All-Star game, and, using guys like Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, Drew Brees, I mean, those guys are perfectionists, and those guys, drive their teammates to be perfect as well. And it's a tremendous leadership quality that they have, and it's something that I feel like I carry with me as well. The ability to motivate your teammates, and moving forward here, my goal is to get in the team and make a squad, and wear an NFL helmet, and using those guys as kind of the pedestal, and looking at them and kind of showing everyone else when I get there what I can do will be very important.
We're talking to Wisconsin Whitewater quarterback Matt Blanchard as he prepares for the upcoming NFL draft. And Matt, let's play a little game called Getting to Know You. I got a few questions for you so we can understand and know who Matt Blanchard really is. You ready to play?
Okay. Yeah, I'm ready.
Your favorite NFL team growing up?
Favorite NFL team? Well, I'm from the Chicagoland area, so it'd be the Chicago Bears.
Okay. The song or songs that Matt Blanchard listens to before a game?
Oof. Before the game, I got Drake, his whole CD turned up. I love music of all kinds, but this past season, Right Above It by Lil Wayne and Drake kind of got me through every pregame.
Matt Blanchard's favorite quarterback growing up?
Oof. Favorite quarterback growing up. Being a Bears fan, didn't have a lot of great quarterbacks that played there. So you had to kind of search around. Growing up, I loved when Tom Brady, loved him, what he was doing. I think I idolized Drew Brees the most. My parents went to Purdue. They took me to a couple Purdue Boilermaker games, and I got to see Drew play when he was in college. And, I kind of fell in love with the way he played the game and kind of his chip on his shoulder being an undersized quarterback. So I'd have to say Drew Brees.
All right. I think we got to know Matt Blanchard a little bit. And Matt, you got a pro day coming up. How big of a day is that for you? Put into words how big of a day that is for you.
Oh, it's big. You're trying to up your stock in the draft, just like everyone else is doing. But, for teams who might not know who want to get to know more about me, it's going to be a great opportunity for me to showcase my athleticism, running the 40, doing the pro, doing the L, through all the physical elements. It's going to be great. It's going to be big for me, and I look forward to showing what I can do.
And you've been training to run the 40. What's the fastest 40 time you had at this point?
I'm going to keep that close to the vest. we'll see come the pro day. I'm running some good times right now, and I'm in great shape, moving forward here, and it's going to be a great opportunity for me.
You said 4.4, right?
Yeah, I think I said something like that, right?
Matt, I saw you on Twitter. Where can fans connect with you right now?
Twitter would be the best. Twitter would be the best way. You know, Matt Blanchard 15. Just at me anytime. You know, I'm on that thing looking at, you know, tweets every day, every minute, most of the time. So, you know, hit me up there and take any questions. And, you know, I look, you know, like I said, it's really exciting moving forward here.
Matt, it was exciting and it was a pleasure talking to you. We wish you nothing but the best of luck moving forward. And let's do this again.
Absolutely. Thanks, Paul. I appreciate it.
Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Matt Blanchard, quarterback, Wisconsin Whitewater. I mean, he's getting himself ready for the upcoming NFL draft. And you look at it, and you made a good question. That was a good question with the Jeremy Lin and everything. Those guys out there, do they motivate you? Do they help you say, you know what, I can do this. I can do this. And I can do this at the highest of levels. So, you know, you wonder how much those type of things motivate guys.
I mean, I think the one thing that Lin, you know, when we talk about Lin just for a second again, I think the one he's proving is that and this has been proven before, that you don't necessarily have to go to a major college basketball school or a lot of times, you know, you don't have to go to a major college program to be and to transcend and to have an excellent NFL career. It certainly doesn't hurt. I mean, you know, you go to a school of national acclaim and you're going to get national attention. But I think it's more and more you look at some of these players that are coming out, and although you know, lately the guys of our era, Paul, who come into the NFL and make real names for themselves, and probably the most notable, Tom Brady, went to Michigan, but you know, he certainly has never made any secret of the fact that going the sixth round was not something that he ever forgot. And the same with Aaron Rodgers, you know, having to sit there for an entire first round. Those are things that stick with players. So I think that the mindset of a lot of these players now has become that they are good enough to play in the league no matter what college they went to and what draft pick they come from.
And that's a great point. I mean, the reality is now those guys use those type of things to motivate them. Drew Brees, you know, he uses people talking about his size to motivate them. Tom Brady, he uses going in the sixth round to motivate them. Guys are using these type of things to motivate them and to show the world that, you know what, you missed out on something great here. And you watch, I know the show a few weeks, not a few weeks back, but I know a show that was produced this year, The Brady Six. And you look at some of the guys who went before Tom Brady, guys like Spurgeon Wynn, guys like Giovanni Carmazzi. I mean, to name a couple. I mean, you're throwing out those type of names. Those are the type of say who, what, who is that? And so you look at that and you say, wow. I mean, those are the type of guys that went before Tom Brady. You know, those are the type of guys that went before a guy who was a 3-time Super Bowl winner. Those are the type of guys who went before a guy who appeared in 5 Super Bowls. I mean, that's just amazing sometimes how people can miss out on this type of talent. Even with Jeremy Lin, you look at it, a few teams cut him this year, and he was even in the D-League. And you wonder, how does this type of guy slip through the cracks, especially with all the technology that we have? You would think that we'd be able to see everybody's game and analyze them better than we could before. I mean, you just think, and all these different tools that we have to measure the type of success that a person could have in the league moving forward. I mean, you wonder, and you look at it, and, you know, this drafting is really not an exact science. I mean, in a lot of ways, it's an art. I mean, you can have all the measurables and all those things, but some things that you really can't measure is heart. You can't really measure the person in a lot of ways. It becomes very difficult to measure those type of things, and that's what you have with the NFL draft. It's an exact science. And that's what you have sometimes when you bring in certain players. You just don't know. I mean, Jeremy Lin is a guy who came literally out of nowhere. He came literally out of nowhere, and before you know it, you have Lin Sanity. Before you know it, you have Lin Sanity, and Jeremy Lin is a guy who really, really came out of nowhere. And it defies all logic in a lot of ways. It really does, especially with all the things that we have to measure ability, talent, all the things, all the eyes and ears that we have, all the scouts, so on and so forth. You just get surprised sometimes when guys slip through the cracks. It's really surprising, very surprising sometimes.
Well, I think, Paul, too, and you talk about the draft and you know, with the NFL draft coming up, and throughout history it's been proven. And I think the NFL, of all the drafts, is probably the one that produces – the most would-be, you know, misses. There is an issue when you look now at a league that is transcending player abilities into player, you know, personalities, and they are molding, and they want these young players to come into this league at 21, at 19, and be grown men, but also they're handing them millions and millions of dollars, and the league is intervening too much sometimes in personality, and then too much in their abilities. And the most recent, you know, obvious example of that was Aaron Rodgers. I mean, clearly, you know, he was the sure shot quarterback, but because teams at that last second, they always go for best available, whatever that, you know, Mel Kiper phrase is that year, maybe best available athlete or most important need, when you know, the best available athlete, if a team ever did just draft on best available athlete or most talented, then probably I always think they would do better than getting in all these philosophies and what do they need and what is projecting and what about 3 years out. I look at what Indianapolis is doing right now, and I say to myself, it's certainly difficult for, you know, this Manning era or you know, Peyton Manning is a great athlete. I think it's tough to be the ownership, but it's the right call. I mean, clearly they have nothing behind him. It showed this year. And the fact is, if you have a draft pick in this year's draft and you have a guy like Andrew Luck who is a can't-miss quarterback, then you don't miss. I mean, the fact remains, no one knows what anyone's going to do in the NFL, but when you get a chance to do this, trading that pick away, which predominantly has been done throughout the years, or taking a reach player when you don't necessarily maybe want that quarterback, but you take a receiver or a running back instead, and then, you know, you're reaching, other teams may reach, which was ultimately the case when you go back and you look at what happened to Aaron Rodgers. He just got stuck in a vortex, and it was very unfortunate to watch him fall. And the minute you could tell that he was within three or four picks of the Packers, you know, everyone's eyes kind of shifted and saw if he gets down there, they are going to take him. That Packers organization will take him, and kudos to, you know, to them for recognizing that they're not gonna fall victim to seeing, well, maybe we could get him later, or we don't necessarily need this right now. It wasn't a need for us. We didn't project to have him here. The same, and that's why I say same with Indianapolis. People say, oh, trade the pick and they could get value later in another year, maybe get a third this year and a first next year. But the chances of them getting an Andrew Luck in 2 years or in 1 year, I don't know.
And that's a great point, a very great point. And let's bring in now Florida State offensive tackle Andrew Dacko as he prepares for the upcoming NFL draft. Andrew, how are you, sir?
I'm doing real good.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And Andrew, first of all, you played 4 games this year for Florida State. You went down with a shoulder injury. Reports are that you are 100%. At this point, how is the shoulder?
It's actually doing great. I'm training right now at Pete Bomarito's place in North Miami Beach, and the shoulder has come along real good. I actually started bench pressing about 3 weeks ago, and everything's doing great.
Okay. And you talked about the bench pressing. Will you be able to participate in the bench pressing drills at the combine?
It depends what they tell me, because I actually can bench, but my strength isn't 100%. All the way there, so I'm not sure whether I'll be benching at the combine or waiting until pro day yet.
Okay, and we shall see with that. And I mean, like you said, talking about the combine is coming up in the next week, actually. And before the injury, I mean, many projected you as a second or third round pick. I mean, the combine is going to be very big for you since you only played four games this year. Talk about how excited you are to kind of prove everybody and show everybody exactly what you can do.
You know, I'm actually really excited. You know, they only got to see me play four games, so really scouts and teams really haven't seen me play since the beginning of the season. So I'm actually really excited to show them what I have to got, because this is really the first time after the injury they're going to see how my shoulder is, see how I perform. So I'm just excited to go out there and show them that I'm 100% and ready to go.
And that's a great thing, and hopefully you can prove that during these combines. Go ahead, Jeremy.
You know, it's interesting. When you get ready for combines, we just get off the thing with another draft player getting ready. Take us through one of your routines. Take us through a day in getting ready and what you go through.
You know, we're there at the facility at 6:30 in the morning. We're there eating breakfast, and then we'll get treatment for any just to get the body ready for the day. We'll be going through treatment, and then usually our speed work will – I know for the linemen, we'll start at 10:30, and before that, we'll have other little drills. And then after, like, speed work, it'll be, like, an hour and a half, then we'll have lunch. And then after that, we'll be lifting, either working our legs to help us be more explosive or working our upper body to help us for that bench. And then after that, we'll do position work for the position drills at the combine. So pretty much we're just busy throughout the whole day doing different things to help us with the different drills.
And what time does this day start, and what time does this day end?
We're there at 6:30 in the morning for breakfast, and then usually we'll be done about 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Okay, wow. I mean, that's a long day.
Yeah.
Is this a stressful period for you at this point?
Not really. You know, I'm actually real excited and feeling good that I'm actually get to prepare for the combine. Many people don't have that chance, and just to get my body right again since I was hurt during the year. It's just a good feeling for me that I'm actually 100% doing good.
And, Andrew, looking at it now, I mean, a big part of the combine is, of course, is the running and the bench pressing and all the various drills. But there's also this Wonderlic test, and, I mean, you're an academic All-American at Florida State, so you're a very bright guy. But have you prepared for this test?
Yes, we have. Like, there's a guy at Pete's Place that help us out, and also my agent brings people in to help us with this. So they also help us a lot with this, because people don't realize the running part's only half a day out of 4 days, and the real important parts are the, you know, Wonderlic, all the interviews you do with teams. So there's more than just testing good at the combine also.
And you talked about that, and essentially this is basically like a job interview, and I mean, so you're basically learning job interviewing skills at this point in a lot of ways.
Yeah, pretty much. We're learning just, you know, how to communicate well, how to present yourself to teams, because when you open that door and you got GMs and coaches, you really want to present yourself well so they know you have good character and you're a good guy and that they want you.
We're talking to Florida State offensive tackle Andrew Datko as he prepares for the upcoming NFL draft. And Andrew, another guy that is preparing for the NFL draft is Zerby Sanders, and he was the guy that played with you at Florida State, and you guys are working out together. How has Zerby pushed you during these workouts?
You know, even the 4 years at college, you know, we just pushed each other because we really didn't have guys pushing for our spot, so we had to build something from within each other to keep pushing ourselves. So, you know, we just compete against each other, like, day in and day out in college, and that kind of helps us even here. You know, we're just – it's kind of almost like friendly competition. We're pushing each other just to get better, encouraging each other to get higher numbers or get a faster time. So it's been a real nice time training with them here.
So you go through, Andrew, you go through a career in college football, you practice, you go through games, and now getting ready for the NFL draft, you know, in the combines and the practices. Explain the differences between, you know, getting ready for a game and now getting ready for an NFL draft.
It's a little different because, you know, games, we're watching film, we're watching that defense, we're trying to figure out all those little things. And for the combine, it's almost trying to get that extra tenth of a second on that 40 or something. So we're trying to find those, almost critique the little things and everything. So there's probably like a similarity in preparing, but probably just a difference in the two different concepts.
As you look at it now, I mean, as you prepare for the draft and everything, a lot of questions you're going to get is whether or not you can stay healthy.
Uh-huh.
How would you respond to a question like that?
You know what? I would say, like, right now, my shoulder's 100%. I'm doing real good. And really, it's just been just that the shoulder has really been the only thing, and it's just been just a fluke accident how it happened. So it's not like my shoulder is just it's like done with. It's actually doing real good and actually can keep performing well. But I'll tell them it's really only been my shoulder for a year, so that the rest of my body has been doing great. And I could play at a high level and still stay healthy.
And Andrew, we play a little game right now. Let's play a little game called Getting to Know You. Let's all get to know you a little better. I got a couple questions for you, so we can all get to know you a little bit better. You ready to go?
Okay. Yep.
Your favorite NFL team growing up?
Miami Dolphins.
Miami Dolphins, okay.
Yep.
Your favorite player growing up?
That has to be Jason Taylor. Watching
Jason
play
Taylor,
for the
okay.
Dolphins.
And Andrew, you're 6'6", 321 pounds, please. That's what you're listed. What is your favorite meal?
My favorite meal would have to be the homemade pizza my mom makes every weekend.
Okay. So
yep.
We got to know a little bit about you. That's a good thing. And Andrew, I have somebody who wants to talk to you, give you a little advice. We'll bring in now. Let's bring in now the newest member of the Hall of Fame, Willie Rolfe. Willie.
How you doing?
How you doing?
Doing well, Willie. Andrew? Doing good.
I'm doing good.
Good. Andrew, I just wanted he asked me to come talk to you today. I just want to wish you good luck, man. And I just want to tell you to keep working hard and make sure you get that shoulder strong. And whatever they ask you to do, whoever drafts you, all you want to do is get in there and play, man, and play hard. And I know you're a real good athlete. My rookie year, they put me at right tackle, and they moved me to left my second year. But, it's just a matter of you getting on the field, man, and, you know, proving all the critics and all the people that have questions about you wrong once you get that shot. So it doesn't matter where you get drafted or what happens, man. You just do your best right now and take care of your business.
Yes, sir. Yeah, I've been going 100% every day trying to do all those things.
Yeah. Go ahead, Paul.
And Andrew, you have any questions for Willie Rolfe?
Yeah, I would say ask you, like, what was the biggest thing from going to college to the NFL? What was maybe the biggest or hardest transition?
Well, you know, the hardest thing is, especially for me, I went to Louisiana Tech, so we didn't play in a lot of bowl games. So back then, the training camps are a little easier now, but, you know, the training camp and the length of the season is going to be a hard transition, and just your body getting used to playing all those, going through all them practices and playing all them games. And if you're lucky enough to get on a good roster where you get a chance to play, you know, if you start young in your career, then, you know, you're going to be playing a lot more football.
Yes, sir.
And read those defenses.
And Andrew, at this point, is there any projection where you may go? Well, what are you hearing?
I was just right now. It's probably they want to see how my body is or the shoulder is at the combine. But we're working on getting back to where my previous projections were after I showed that all the teams that my shoulder is good.
Okay. And Andrew, like Willie said, and like I'm saying, man, keep doing what you got to do and continue to prepare for this NFL draft. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Yes, sir.
We wish you nothing but the best of luck moving forward and good luck with the draft.
All right, thank you. Thank you for everything. Thank you for having me on your show.
Thank you for joining us.
All right, thank you.
Good luck, Andrew.
Andrew Dacko, offensive tackle, Florida State, as he prepares for the upcoming NFL draft. And Willie, while we got you here, let's bring in now 11-time Pro Bowler, the one, the only newest member of the Hall of Fame, Willie Rowe. Willie, how are you, sir?
Good. Just enjoying this service. They got this beautiful service for Whitney Houston on TV right now, and it's just been wonderful to watch everybody get up and say a few words about her. And I think this is more important than what happened, the tragedy. But the service has been excellent.
It has, and I watched a little bit of it myself, and it's been a pretty good presentation to this point. I got it on TV as we speak. And really, I mean, looking at Whitney Houston now and talking about her, what is your favorite Whitney Houston song?
You know that movie, obviously, I Will Always Love You was a big song, but some of her early albums, I really did enjoy more than one song. So I don't really have a favorite Whitney Houston song. I just her voice was just so beautiful. So it's more her body of work.
Definitely, and Whitney Houston is a legend, a musical legend, an icon, and it's sad to see her go at the age of 48. I mean, that's young. That's very young to be dying. And Willie, right now we're looking at this whole situation with Peyton Manning, and it was disclosed this past week that Peyton Manning had a fourth surgery on the neck in between the surgery he had in May, and then that in between the surgery he had in May and the last surgery that he had in September. We don't know the particulars of the surgery that he had, but if you were advising Peyton Manning, would you tell him to walk away?
I mean, that's a lot, man. I mean, I'm sorry, Paul, to say, and then if you do have the surgeries, don't hide them. You know what I mean? I mean, if you're having all these surgeries, you're basically trying to regenerate and get something going that's not happening. So, it doesn't make sense to do this to your body to try to keep playing football at 35 years old, going on 36. I mean, I don't know. He will be 36. He will be 36 this upcoming season. So, I would say he needs to really sit back and think about if he really wanting to do this to himself with everything he's got going on and the fact that he has two little kids, that he just had infants. That's another thing, raising those kids. So do you want to take the time to relocate and move your family and go through all that to see if you can even play football? Is the question. And I mean, for next surgery, Paul, they can't give him any money guaranteed right now. You can't give him no $28 million. You can say we'll give you some money if you come back from the injury because we already gave you $20 last year and you didn't even play. So, if I was talking to Peyton, I would really be, if I'm his family member, I'd be really seeing if it's really, do they really want to keep doing this?
Paul, he brings up a great point, and that's the age. You know, I could understand, and I agree with you 100%, Willie, if he was 21 or 29, 31, but almost at 36 years old, you literally have to look at what sport you're playing. This is not baseball. This is not basketball, where maybe you could play into your early 40s. And also considering the fact that this is his neck, when does he think how many more great seasons? Because to come back and to go through all of this, to come back and be mediocre, it is to me asinine. So to come back and be the old Peyton Manning, how much longer, even without this injury, was he expecting to play?
And that's a great point, Jeremy. How much longer was he expecting this? Thinking he was going to play? And if he's worried about his arm strength, and if his arm is not, he can't throw across his body, or he's just trying to get his arm strength, even if he gets his arm strength up to where it is capable of throwing good, once you put on the pads and once you start taking those hits, that's totally different than trying to play. I might be able to get out here, Paul, and run around out here with no clothes on, or go out here and think I can go out here and do some pass sets against some guys and maybe feel good doing a little bit of that with a t-shirt and shorts on. But that's a whole different ball game. We're talking about them putting pads on, getting out there on the football field, and going through that. I mean, it's something you really you gotta be able to do. And if we're talking about it doesn't come back this year, a guy 2 years removed from the game, if he can't play this year, you talk about somebody trying to come back at, you know, 37 years old. So, like Jeremy said, what more can he do to make his legacy any bigger? If he doesn't go back to the Super Bowl and he's playing on a mediocre team, it doesn't add to the legacy. So, I mean, he's pretty much done everything he can do.
I will argue this, and I'll say this. The last year he played, 2010, 33 touchdowns, big-time numbers he put up with Indy, and he was the reason that the Colts were in the playoffs. You take a Peyton Manning out of the equation, the Colts are a two-win team and out of the playoffs. But you look at Peyton Manning and you say, if he's 100%, I think Peyton Manning can still be Peyton Manning if he's 100%.
They have a new team, a new coach, a new GM, a new staff. We're not talking about the same whole. Everything is blown up now. Let's go here. That whole organization, that whole front, the whole is so kaboom. Everything that Peyton Manning was used to, everything that Peyton Manning had, and we know that Peyton Manning over years, they have always said how much he is a stickler about the same thing and doing his routine. Well, all that's changed. We have a whole new thing. So it's like Peyton Manning is going to start. It's going to be some of the players back, but he's starting over with a whole new staff that's going to bring in a lot of new players. So it's in the same team.
Well, I'm not saying it with the Colts. I think if he's going to come back, I think his best interest would be in another situation, I think if Peyton Manning is 100%, if he's 100%, doctors clear him, everything is good. If he is 100%, he was cleared by two doctors a few months back, but he hasn't passed the NFL physical at this point. But if he is 100%, I don't think Peyton Manning can help a team. If he's 100%, you don't think if you stick Peyton Manning on the New York Jets, that's a better football team? If he's 100%, you don't think if you put Peyton Manning on the Washington Redskins, that's not a better football team?
No, because you're not willing. Let this be a lesson to you. This man is a wild card. You put a microphone in this man's hand in a tent, and you expect this man to sing a song. This man's gonna do what he wants, because you didn't hear what Willie said, you didn't hear what I said, which is you're taking a guy with Peyton Manning at 100%, but it's totally unknown, because it's certainly not the old Peyton Manning that we saw in that Colts offense for a decade or over a decade. When you talk about him going into the Redskins. Or into the Jets, or even back to the Colts, or even with the Packers, with 49ers, it doesn't matter where he goes. It's a whole new system. Unless the whole team decides, you know what, we're going to go get every player you have with the Colts, and we'll just let you run the offense. So it's a comparable situation. He's going into a totally unknown, and he's had a year off, and he's 36. And history shows any major NFL injury, and Willie, you speak on this. It takes players at least a year to bounce back from that. So you're talking about now a guy starting resurrecting his career, arguably 37, 38 years old.
And another thing, Paul, we have to look at, just like when my last year I was 35 and I was going to turn 36. At 35, your body start. You know, when I was in hit my mid the early 30s, your body start. My body started feeling it, and we were having tough practices. But it gets to a point where your body just doesn't want to do it. And the neck injury he had, the knee situation. But when you're talking about having four surgeries on your neck, like when you say 100%, you're talking about just 100% capable of throwing the football. We're not talking about with any type of pads on. We're not talking about 40, 50 times, 30, 40 times a game. And you're talking about all these different systems. Washington wants you to bootleg and roll out. You know, a lot of Peyton is not a rollout quarterback. He's a stand-in-the-pocket quarterback that gets with the ball with rhythm on time, and he doesn't get hit a lot because he doesn't get sacked a lot. When he was at his best, Peyton got rid of the ball quick, and he never got sacked. Peyton sacked 15 times a season when he was at his peak. So we're talking about a guy, we got timing, we got a lot of different things going. It's going to be a whole new deal. So you know, Peyton doesn't know what Peyton can do. So that's the whole issue here. So, I mean, you can't throw a lot of boatload of money at him with four surgeries, and you can't depend on him to make it through the year. Every day he's going to have to get on a new contract, it's going to be, let's start over, and it's going to have to be incentive-based on if he can play. And that means you got to have another veteran quarterback just in case he can't play. And I just think there's too many ifs for a guy that's going to be 36 years old. I mean, like Jim said, he's not 22 years old. So, obviously, Paul, you have to understand that the system is going to have to going to be big gear toward Peyton dropping back or being in a shotgun, surveying the field, getting the ball out quick. So wherever he's going to go, it's not going to be a play action and all that stuff. Peyton never was a play action and dropping and rolling out of the pocket. He never had to do that in Indy.
But you look at it, Willie, I mean, I think any team that's going to pick up Peyton Manning obviously is going to have a system that caters to what he does best. They're going to cater to what he does best, and that is getting the ball out quickly. And you know, they're going to cater to what he does best. And so I look at it this way. If Peyton Manning is 100%, and I understand all the variables, but I think you could say that about anybody in the league in a lot of ways, because any player is truly one play away. So, but you look at Peyton Manning. If he is 100%, you don't think he's an upgrade over Mark Sanchez, Rex Grossman, Kevin Cobb, Matt Moore, to name a few. You don't think he's an upgrade in those particular for those particular teams?
But
if he's 100%?
The problem is you're not going to know if he's 100% till he's out there making it through the regular season. And then you're going to have to figure out if he can be 100%. So, if he's 100%, but it's so many ifs. We don't know if he's going to be 100% by September. He can't pass an NFL physical right now. He cannot throw the ball up to NFL standards. And this is my thing. If you're Peyton Manning, and if you've been that good a quarterback since he came into the league, he's been one of the top quarterbacks in the whole time he's played. So do you want to end your career not being a shell of yourself or not being secure with what you can do? And I promise you this, if he can't play at that level he's played at before, he would be miserable trying to play football. He would never be happy going out like that.
Well, but even further, and Paul, let me bring you back to one of the things that I think you just refuse to accept, which is there's no question that if Peyton Manning is 100%, he'll be a major upgrade at the quarterback position for a lot of NFL teams. But when you're looking at this guy, then it goes back to the point that Willie and I started this on, which is, you know, at this age, where are these teams when they upgrade to Peyton Manning? If their immediate goal, when I mean immediate, Paul, it needs to be within 2 years. And you're going to say, right, the New York Giants are going to try to win a Super Bowl in 2 years. Their window closed last year. They had their window. So most of these teams are going to reach with the Giants. They don't have the defense. Arguments could be made, but the question is, like Willie said, but here you now, when even you say 100%, no one really knows what the new 100% for Peyton Manning is until he gets that arm and the regeneration of those nerves. There's no guarantee he's ever going to be the old Peyton Manning. His new 100% could be his old 80%.
Well, and I mean, that's a fair point. I understand that there are a lot of ifs with this whole situation. There are a lot of ifs. But I think in a lot of ways, I mean, obviously you're not going to sign a Peyton Manning if you don't deem him 100% or pretty much close to it. You're not going to sign him. So I think in looking at it, if Peyton Manning and the physicals and all the doctors tell me that Peyton Manning is 100%, I think if you're a franchise who needs a quarterback like the Jets, Mark Sanchez is not the answer, like the Cardinals, like the Dolphins, like the Redskins, even the 49ers for that matter, I think you take a chance with this guy, and I think that's what you do. But we'll see what happens with Peyton Manning moving forward. And if I truly was advising Peyton Manning, I probably would tell the guy to step away as well, because all the surgeries on the neck, I mean, at what point is it really, really worth it? You made a lot of money in this game, a whole lot of money. So at what point, I mean, is it really worth it at this point? You made a lot of money. You got a young family. You just had twins. So there's really, you don't really have anything to prove at this point.
And
I agree with all those
top, and they already say he's top 20, 30 football player all time, so he's not going to increase his unless he wins the Super Bowl, Paul, this is my and Jeremy's point. Unless he gets to the playoffs and makes another run at the Super Bowl, which his brother has too, he's not going to raise his whatever number they got him slotted at in the annals of pro football all time. It's not going any higher unless he gets a Super Bowl ring. So what we're saying is he's got to go somewhere and make a Super Bowl run in the next 2 or 3 years. That,
right.
If he did, now, on the flip side of this, Jeremy, if he did come off the neck injury, and if he did make another Super Bowl run, you would have to put him up there with the all-time, all-times. For what he's going through and everything he's going through this year, if he did, what Peyton's looking at, if I did come back and I did make another Super Bowl run with another team at 35, you know, 36, 37, 38 years old, he would go down as arguably the top, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 quarterbacks. Because, I mean, what he's going through at this age to come back and win one, nobody's done it.
And I agree. I mean, I think it's a fair point. And I agree. He really, truly does not have anything to prove at this point. And again, if I was advising Peyton Manning, I would tell him, you know what? You have nothing to prove. You don't have the financial issues, as far as we know. So it really doesn't matter at this point. You really should probably walk away. And speaking of a guy who walked away but now wants to come back, Randy Moss, he retired last season, but now he said he wants to come back. And this is a guy last year who was, well, 2 years ago, who was not very effective, did not have a good year. But if I'm a team, I think I look at him. I think you definitely have to take a look. But, Willie, if you're a team, would you look at Moss?
Oh, man, that's a tough – you know, maybe he's motivated this year. The problem is this. The only way I look at Randy Moss, if I'm a team, it's got to be a veteran team with a group of players on it that he's going to be able to say, all right, we can go in there and win, and they're going to be motivating him. If he goes to a team where he's not on a veteran group and he's not motivated, he's just trying to collect a check, then does he check out like he did that last year? And that last year, let's think about it. He got let go by New England that year, traded to Minnesota. He was making a big check. So he was making a lot of money that last year when he went to Minnesota, then he went to Tennessee, and he still wasn't performing. So we're talking about a guy that's going to get close to the minimum with some incentives to play football coming here. And it's like I said, it's got to be a veteran team if it picks him up with some players around it. Because last thing you want to do is invest in him and then he checks out on you again.
Right.
You know, and that would be the last stop. But is he coming back for football or is he coming back to collect a check?
And you look at it, any team that brings in Randy Moss has all the leverage. They have all the leverage. So it's kind of a minimal risk in a lot of ways. And like you said, I would agree with you. You want to put him on a team with some veterans, a team that just in case he steps out of line can put him back in line. And the reality is if he does step out of line, the team probably would let him go anyway. And I look at guys like Randy Moss. I look at guys like Terrell Owens. I look at guys like Allen Iverson. They are, unfortunately, they're that cute girl, that real cute girl who had the awful attitude. But as the cute girl gets a little ugly, no one's going to want to deal with her. And that's what you're getting with these guys. No one wants to deal with these guys anymore because they're not as cute as they once were, and they still have that nasty attitude, or they had that nasty attitude.
All of them are cute when they're in the club when they're 20, 21, 22. When they get 35 and then they start competing with these young girls, then it's a whole other ballpark, Paul. And then they have
right.
to realize that they don't have this. They can't do what they used to do. You know, these guys used to command – everybody wanting them and all that, and it's hard for your ego to go from I'm the man to now I'm an old head in the club and don't nobody want to talk to me. They're talking to the young girls.
Well, you're bringing up a major issue in all professional sports, and to a certain degree too. This is something that to me Peyton Manning is grappling with, which is exactly what you said, which is looking in the mirror and saying, you know, who am I? I mean. They see a very, you know, Allen Iverson, Terrell Owens, to be old, to say, and you know that, you retired at 35 years old. to say at 35 years old you're old is it's very hard to understand, because at 35 years old, you know, every other human being is arguably in the peak of their, you know, existence. But it, for an athlete, you might be 80, and so how do they, you know, balance? Where do they go? What do they do? And especially because their name still means something, but the problem is it means something to maybe a fan, but to a general manager, to an owner, to a head coach, at 35, Terrell Owens' name is it creates indigestion. Allen Iverson, to an owner or to a coach, who's that?
And that's the sad part.
Well, these guys, at least these guys have some notoriety. I mean, you would think they would some type of commentary or some type of job. Well, the bottom line is this, Jeremy Paul. If they had gotten a good financial advisor and had been a little more conservative with what they were doing, you know, I didn't do everything I needed to do, but I had a good financial advisor for my whole career, did my taxes, did stuff for me, put me on somewhat of a budget where I just didn't have access to so much money that I could blow it, or if I wanted to go buy a house or go rent another property and I owned another one, they would tell me, no, you don't need to do this. So the problem with these guys is they don't have anybody telling them what to do, and they're not listening to anybody, and then they spread themselves too thin. And then when you try to figure out what getting the situation together, most of these guys are in the hole before their careers are over with, and they can't pick up the pieces. You know, they got kids, they got family obligations, they got all this property and stuff, and you got to sell it, or if you can't sell it, it's going to get foreclosed on. I mean, let's be realistic. So you got to make sure you have your priorities in order. And when I got traded from New Orleans and I came back off that knee surgery in Kansas City, that my objective was to get all my financial situation in order and make sure I had enough in the bank where I could bring in some money or figure out a way to bring in some money, rental property or via buying a whatever I had to do, or the income coming off of it when the stock market changed around, you have enough liquid cash to make you be able to sustain a living. And when you're in the hole so bad and you're trying to dig yourself out of it or find other ways to switch money around, then it puts you in a tough situation.
It truly does. And you look at a guy like Allen Iverson in a lot of ways, and unfortunately for him, there are talks that he is in some financial difficulties. I mean, this is a guy on the court that made $154
million.
$154 million. And that doesn't even count his endorsement money. He had a lifetime contract with Reebok. So the guy has made a lot of money. But the one thing with Allen Iverson, and I don't know if you really had to deal with this as much as Allen Iverson had to, Allen Iverson pretty much brought up a whole community in a lot of ways. He brought up a lot of members of his family, his friends, and everybody. I mean, Allen Iverson basically came from nothing, and he brought up a lot of people. And so, in that way, you can see how $154 million can go to nothing.
Well, this is what I'm saying. What happens, Paul? And when I'm younger, I had a lot of some of my homeboys with me, and I would look out for them and bring them places and do stuff for them. But what I'm telling you is, when Allen Iverson decided to get old and try to get married, he had to cut all that off. You can't be running. I mean, what a story about him having a hotel suite, and there's so many people that were just sleeping on the floor and all over the place that right. He had following him around. And I heard a story that somebody told me in Denver, you know how people talk, that, you know, he bought like three or four, he had the big houses he had to let go in Denver. And I heard he had three or four houses he was buying for them, and he wasn't in Denver but a year and a half maybe. So at some point, you got to cut all these damn people off. I'm sorry, because you had to cut them off, and you got to know that you're spending too much money, and you got to cut back. You can't take care of everybody forever and everybody in your neighborhood. You got to cut that off. And these guys have to understand from the start, you help them out a little bit. I done could have gave him some money, helped the people out, but then you got to let them live their lives, and he should have cut a lot of that stuff off, and he didn't know how to do it. And now, if he did, now that he's in the situation he is, nobody can bail him out unless it's another player. He's stuck in that situation. So you can't take care of everybody in your family forever. You have to cut them off and make sure you have enough money to take care of you and your family and your kids when you're gone. You know, or what was the point of playing all that ball for so long?
But, Willie, you know this, and it's now, especially I think the league that has done the best job of this is certainly the NFL. It starts at, you know, it starts really in college, but it starts in year one, which is you don't walk into this league with this word of a posse or your family, because, number one, this money is, A, highly taxable, even at these supposedly low rates for you guys, and number two, this money, as I just said, you retire, this money ends very quickly. Your career and the greatest careers in even the longest is only a 20-year career. But there are business executives who can work from 40 till 75, 80 years old. You can get, I mean, Warren Buffett, he's still working. So you can, I mean, when you parallel other industries, you have a very finite time, and arguably the average is well less than five, to make money that will potentially last you a lifetime. So the notion of having a little bit of fun your first year or your second year, that's where the drug gets injected in your bloodstream, which is, well, you had a good year first year. Now, you know, well, let me just do one more, or I'm going to cut back a little bit. And then you're 5 years in, and you know what? A team says, well, you had a bad ankle or this or that, and the money stops. But the spending can't, because it now has become a way of life.
Yeah, but Jeremy, we're not talking about a guy like him that had a five-year career. We're talking about a guy that played 14 years. We're talking about me that played 13 years. After 5 or 6 years, Allen Iverson could have blew the whole damn contract on all the money he had in the first 7, 8 years, as much money as he made on the back end. We're talking about guys that made $150 million, and he was making he made $20 million when he got to Denver. So he was making money, or a lot of money, in year 11, 12, 13. So, you know,
I argue, Will.
Okay.
Go ahead. I mean, I'm going to say this, and you know this, but let me, because I'm going to say, as the guy who does know the numbers, even when Allen Iverson's making $20 million a year, you know more than 50% of that is going to taxes, and then he's got an agent. The problem is that number, people look at the $20 million a year instead of looking at what really is $20 million.
No, and I would say this. No, 40% is going to taxes, and then 3 or 4% to his agent. So he's still bringing home $10, $11 million. He's making $10, $11 million out of that $20. But when you're spending $4 or $5 million or whatever a year, you know, with the 20, so out of the 20, he's paying taxes. He's still taking home at least half, Jeremy. He's taking home 10. So even if he takes home $10 million, that's a lot. That's a lot of money. So even if you spend five, you got five.
But you're the guy, Willie. You at least have to give me this. You are even before your generation and after you, you are the absolute athletic anomaly. No one does what you did, which you told us before. You gave your money to other people. You said to them, I don't want to even touch this. I want you to tell me how much I can live on, and I'll adjust accordingly so that when I retire, I don't have to wind up like most of the people in my profession. I don't want to wind up broke. I want to wind up living comfortably so that I'm not an Allen Iverson.
Well, and that's such a situation, because Iverson, that's why. But see, Jeremy, the problem I have with it, the NFL, the NBA, all these pro sports, they need to have somebody that can go around and check on these young players and talk to these young players. And Allen Iverson would be a perfect guy to go in these locker rooms and talk to these young guys and say, look, if I had it to do over again, what I could have done. But we hear all the stories about what we could have done if we do it all over again. And Allen Iverson knows, you know, all the money he blew, and then the people outside of the money he's blowing, all the money people are taking from him, all the stuff, all the expenses, he's been taking care of everybody. you know, if he could do it over again and just save a portion of the money. We're talking
right.
about out of the 10, a million a year. If he put $1 million a year away of that, he would still have, you know, $15, $20 million put away.
I absolutely agree. Every sport should have a mandatory – your every professional sport, every athlete should sign – they should it should be mandated. I don't know why these players' unions haven't mandatorily set up those custodial funds and basically said, you know, if you want to be a part of our union – because the history has shown that, and I don't disagree. It's very unfortunate, especially when you look at a guy like Allen Iverson, who made the $150 million, $160 million. But the fact is, no one, including his mother, he had no one to say to him, you know, Al, listen, you may be doing all this for everyone and for us and even for you. But we need to put away, like you said, you know, even $1 million or which $1 million a year for and you're right, for a guy like Iverson is probably less than 3% of his you know gross that year. So it was marginal dollars to him throughout his career. But when he retires, you know, $1 million a year or 3% of $150 million, he's still left with darn near, you know, $15, $17, $20 million, which now he can live on. But these athletes decide no one does it.
Or at least have the option to defer. You know, like let's you know yeah. what Rodman did. The team defers the contract. At least give the players the option. All right, you're gonna play this much. Let's defer some of this money for these athletes making a lot of money, so you can't touch it. Well, that's why all these football players want to play, is because the benefits in NFL is structured to set up where you can get money. We get a lot more retirement money set up if you play a long time. So guys like Mark Brunell, that's been in the league 19 years, I mean, in his annuity, he's probably got $600,000 to $700,000, and he gets to draw on that when he's done. And then he's got probably, you know, close to $800,000 to $1 million in his 401k by now. So these guys, you know, and then you're talking about you're 40 years old, your pension kicks in at 55. So these guys have so much money that they're putting away in their retirement. So even if you have some financial problems to file bankruptcy, they can't touch your retirement. So with you know, outside of people talking to them, the NBA and these things should set up money, at least have an option for these players to defer the money, and they don't get to touch it till they get like 50 years old. So even if they're in a situation like Iverson's in, and they should have helped that kid and deferred some money, so Iverson couldn't touch it till he was 50. So even if he was broke or whatever, right now when he's 50, he had an income coming in.
And if you look at Allen Iverson, in a lot of ways, he always said he played every game like it was his last, and then probably that's the way he lived his life. And so, you know, in doing that, you're going to unfortunately live in the moment a lot of the times, and living in the moment, it's going to cost you, and it's costing him dearly at this point. But you guys talk about maybe whether they should have somebody coming around and really talking to these guys. But do you think Allen Iverson really would have listened to anybody at that age? I mean, I don't think he would have.
But I'm not talking about that age, Paul. I'm talking about when he started getting a little older. When he started getting a little older in his career, that's when he needs to listen to somebody. That's when somebody has to step in and talk to these guys and give them some words of advice and go and sit down with them and say, how you doing, man? How are your finances? Are you saving? What are you doing? But, you know, like you said, just like what happened with Michael Vick before Michael Vick went through what he went through. You can't get to him because they got so many people around him, you can't even talk
right.
to these guys.
Well, they wouldn't
sit down and talk to you. And Michael Vick had to go through the situation he went through to grow up, you know, and then understand what he had to do. And it's sad that it always has to be the black athletes that are going through this, and a guy like Peyton Manning has $50 million in the bank. He's still trying to play football, and he's got $50, $60 million in the bank. He ain't spent, you know, probably 10% after taxes of what he's made, or 20% of what he's made after taxes.
So it's
sad that it's in the black athletes that we have to go through this, blind all this jury and all this bullshit that we don't need, and then eventually we have to pay the consequences for what we did. And I bought some stuff, too, when I was younger. But when you get older, Jim, you have to try to figure this out.
No, I am a big proponent. I completely agree. I think it is appalling that these leagues, and I will put this on, Willie, even as I said, the players, you know, the players' union, I really think there needs to be a trusteeship aside from the BS with Terrell, why trusted my agent. I think that is the biggest crock of shit. If you trust your agent, then you almost deserve what you get. These players, and I agree with you, it does unfortunately happen in the black community, predominantly because of, you know, they're coming from a lesser standard of life. But the issue is the leagues, the unions. Watch this, athlete after athlete, and do nothing. And to me, that is the biggest indictment of how little these leagues care about you as players and most of all people, because they could very easily put in standards that say so much percentage of your money goes into, you know, a trust for you when you retire. You're not allowed – it increases, like you said, deferred compensation. So you must mandatorily put in at least 3%. You could do it maybe as much as X number percent. Because predominantly when you're 19, when you're 21 and you come up the way Allen Iverson does, it's very well documented that he felt this unfortunate pressure the same way Michael Vick did to have these people who they felt they owed that got him where they are, when in reality, the minute the hardships fall on both of those athletes, there is no one around them, especially the money.
And I'll make another point on top of this, Jeremy. It's a control thing. You think these teams don't know that Allen Iverson was, when he was in Philly and these different places, didn't know what Allen Iverson was doing and didn't know Allen Iverson was in a financial problem, and these NFL teams don't watch these players and know how they're spending and see if they have financial advisors and seeing what they're doing? You're sadly mistaken. They know these guys are in trouble, and they know they have problems, and they can tell you more than the player knows that you're going down a slippery slope and this guy's going to be broke when he's done playing ball, probably before he's playing ball. These teams and these GMs and these people know what these guys are doing. And you're right. They need to try to help these guys or make them do things or try to make them take a percentage to help these guys out. When you see a guy that's in that situation and you see that he's headed down that pattern, and if I'm a GM, I'm going to have a one-on-one talking to him, because it has to be more than the industry of, okay, let me use Allen Iverson and make all the money I can off him while he's playing basketball. If he's making all this money for my organization and he's filling the seats and doing this stuff for the team like he did in Philadelphia all them years, somebody that was in that organization has to try to connect with him and try to talk to him and try to get him to take care of his business better and help this kid out, because they know what's going on. And if I was with the team, it would be, if he's making me this money, I'm the owner, I'm going to make sure that I do everything I can do to help this man out so I don't see him broke or have these issues when he's 35, 36, 38 years old.
It is a fair point, but at the end of the day, is it really an excuse for a guy to go through hundreds of millions of dollars? There's really no excuse for a guy to go through that kind of money. And granted, yes, I understand there should have been people talking to him. Granted, I understand Allen Iverson. And another thing with this thing is also, you don't have – and Willie, you benefited from having a mother and a father. And unfortunately, we have a lot of guys coming into the league not having that benefit of having the mother and the father. And unfortunately, it's not blaming the mothers in a lot of ways.
They were both
blaming,
professional. Yeah, I grew up in a family that had both professionals. Now, my parents had their issues with my dad with making a lot of money being a dentist in Pine Bluff, but my mom made a lot of money, but I had both professional parents around me.
Right.
So what I'm saying is it has to be a system set up in the NBA that can that somebody can get to these guys and really explain to them how they're blowing through this money and look at it and try to help these guys at some point. All the money they're blowing, they can go back and help their communities out. But the way Allen did it, and then the next one that comes through, these next ones, even now that are coming up, are going to be doing the same damn thing, Paul. Unless you change the way it's set up, it's going to continue to keep happening.
And Willie, you're hitting it 100%. And I think that's the unfortunate part. And that's why I said, Paul, I really believe when you look at the fact that how can someone not know they're going through all that money? You have to understand it. And Willie, they are so far removed from the ownership, if you will, of that money. They allow, oftentimes these athletes allow other people to be signers on checking accounts that they will
power of attorney over everything.
And so people who, and they have very little trusteeship, meaning when you have that responsibility, you're supposed to have the credentials to know what you're doing. They start businesses with their friends, businesses with their family, and they allow themselves to have no ownership even in the businesses because they're con to believe that it's a tax write-off or this or that. If you're in basketball, you're on the road. I mean, a lot of the season, and so you look at the fact that that's why I say, where is the league? Where is the NBA Players Association saying we are more of the cause than any of this? We are paying this money blindly to, especially the NBA. They will bring a kid out of high school. Imagine where you were, Paul, out of high school and signing a contract for umpteen million dollars.
Exactly.
But there is absolutely no one who, like Willie says, could even get a meeting with Iverson. Pat Croce maybe could have, but you even admit it. When Pat Croce sits down with Iverson at 22 years old and says, Allen, you're going through $10 million a week. You're going to bankrupt yourself. Do you think Iverson even understood what that meant?
But the reality is, I mean, and I don't think this is going to end. This is something you're going to see in a lot of ways. If you're coming from a certain point of view, if you're coming from a point of view of no money, you're coming from the ghetto, and all of a sudden you go into the NBA, NFL, this is like a lottery ticket. It's a lottery ticket in a lot of ways. And what happens to a lot of people who win the lottery? They lose their money.
Paul, this is what we're saying. There should be checks and balances for these guys to protect them against themselves. Let's set it up where these guys take a percentage they can't touch, okay, whatever it is, Jeremy's saying a percentage, put it away so these guys have money left when they're done. So if a guy plays 8, 9, 10 years in the league, a portion of that money is set aside. If a guy's making that kind of money on basketball, you can't touch the endorsements. But strictly the NBA or the NFL can take a portion of this money and put it away so these guys can't blow through it. But obviously, you got to have somebody in the organization that is looking out for the best interest of the guys. And I'm telling you, 9 times out of 10, they don't care if the guy's blowing through the money. They want to see the guys blow through the money, and they're not trying to protect the guy against himself. And they see what's going on. They're listening to the guy every day. They're seeing the guy with the entourage of 15, 20 people outside after the game. They know Allen Iverson's paying for everything. You know, I remember when Andre Rison was playing football, and I went to Atlanta in 1993. I go to Atlanta, and I go over there when he was still – Bob Whitfield took me over his house when he was still dating Left Eye. And he was living in a big house in Atlanta. The house didn't have no furniture in it. And he's got 4 or 5 dudes in the house living with him. And all of them are driving cars and going out and kicking it. And you can look at it from then. I'm a rookie. After my rookie, and I'm like, these guys are kicking it so hard. I know they're spending all this man's money. And I'm on the outside looking in after my rookie year. So you see what's going on here. And you know, Iverson has a way bigger posse than what Andre Rison had when he was playing. And it's a travesty for you know, he obviously got to wake up and smell it, but he can, Allen Iverson, in his mind, he doesn't even realize what's going on around him. He's just, you know, going through the motions and just, you know, by the time he got to Denver, you know, the stories about him being drunk and he can't even walk and, you know, he can't even hold his face. You know, it's small. So everybody hears what's going on, Paul, is my point. And when you're that incoherent, he doesn't know what the hell's going on around him, and he's just too far gone at that point.
Well, you know, but I want to hear this from you because you use, like, Andre Rison without using names. I mean, certainly we'd love to hear it because I know I love watching soaps, so I love the gossip. But talk about the real reality. You played many years in the NFL. I mean, is it as bad as, you know, ESPN and Sporting News and everyone says, are these players really, I mean, does it get that bad that they just go into clubs and put $100,000, throw $100,000 in a night, or that they plow through money? Did you ever see it where you were playing or guys you knew that?
No, I mean, you know, and I'm sorry, I'm not to bring, go back to Rob, but I'm just saying, Rob's a good guy. I'm just saying what I saw when I was a young guy going out. When I was coming to the league, it wasn't that. You know, guys weren't going in the club, blowing. Now, guys weren't, they didn't have a table service, the bottle service like it is now. Guys were going to the club with their guys, and they were buying drinks, and they would hang out. It was more so the everyday stuff with the guys. Guys lived at the house. Guys were driving their cars. Guys need money. Everybody, all the parties, everybody coming to your house, having a party, taking care of everybody. Then you got a jeweler. You buy this. I promise you, out of all that jewelry that he bought, and they said he owed that jewelry bill on, some of that was for his entourage, because Allen Iverson got the big chain on. Now he wants to buy all his homeboys running with him a chain. Well, if he buys a couple of them a chain, then the rest of them are going to want some jewelry. They're going to be like, well, right. I'm part of the group. I want some earrings. I want this. I want that. So then you get to the point where Allen's buying some new shoes. I got to buy all these guys new shoes. So it's a cumulative effect of it all. It's not just the going and blowing the $100,000. It's what you're doing on an everyday, day-to-day thing when you're dealing with all these people. And if all of them want to feel like they're the most important guy, and you got to take care of all of them.
And that's the problem. I mean, the reality is you have the hangers-on, and unfortunately there's not enough people around to say no. And what happens, and you look at it, I mean, Allen Iverson, I mean, he came from a rough situation, rough spot. And he came from nothing. And so a lot of people are cashing in on that lottery ticket that he got.
But how long can we keep saying that, Paul? I mean, how long?
But the reality,
I came from, when I was young in the league, I had guys hanging around me. I wasn't buying them stuff all the time, but I had my homeboys that I grew up with in Pine Bluff that went to the Pro Bowl every year, and I took them three or four of them with me everywhere. But then but as far as me hanging out, when I went through a tough time in '97 in New Orleans, and it was 1998, and it was time for me to get my stuff going, and I had started having my son, and I was having a few children. Then I had to realize I got to cut all this off. If I want to stay in this league and I want to still be productive, then I need to cut all this off and concentrate on either having a family. Or I got to get away from all these guys. So then you start cutting it off. You see what I'm saying? You have to cut it off at a certain point. When I got to Kansas City, I was just playing football.
And once you get married, like you said, I mean, it's time at that point. You know, you can't be having all these different guys hanging around your house. I mean, you got a wife now, you got kids. You don't want a bunch of different guys hanging around your house all the time. And I think, you know, in a lot of ways, you have, unfortunately, it's the hood mentality that some of these guys come with. And the reality is, I mean, at some point, you gotta, like you said, you gotta grow up. You gotta grow up, and you gotta say, you know what? You can't hang here no more. I can't hang out with you. I can't do the things I used to do no more. I mean, I can't do that no more.
You know what I can do? I can come home and have a party once a year with you guys and hang out with you guys and have a good time with you, but I can't take care of you guys and give you money and feed you. You guys have to be men and be accountable for your own actions, and I can't raise and take care of all you. I can come home once a year or whatever and see you guys and hang out with you and kick it with you every blue moon, you know, but I can't hang out every time I go on the road. I'm flying these guys here. I'm flying these guys there. We're setting up parties. I'm doing this. You know, I'm telling you, Paul, I mean, they just bled the guy down like a leech, bleeding him dry.
Right.
Well, and I will say this, really, because it does get back to a more macro point, and I am dead set on this. I fought so much these leagues for, in my opinion, they glorify this. The NFL, especially the NBA, the fact that the NBA tries to perpetrate themselves and say they want a dress code, but that just makes the outfits cost more, and it glorifies, you know, to the public how much money these athletes can have and spend. It now becomes a costume show, and to a certain degree, I look at all of this, and I think that there needs to be some governorship somewhere. Some of these leagues need to submit to the fact that these are young people coming from, economically depressed situations, and to put the onus on them, like Paul uses the term, it is like a lottery ticket. Except, yes, they do go to work for it. They earn it. But, I mean, it's the same as hitting a lottery. It's extremely unexpected. It's flattering to wake up one day and win $300 million.
Well, but Jeremy, I had to argue the difference with you. I don't want to see a guy with T-shirts and pants and jeans sagging. I want to see a guy dressed up. I mean, you need to be looking presentable when you're at the game. I think that if you don't have some type of dress code, then you're going to let guys wear everything. So, no, I think that's different. You need to be – or, like you said, with a football team, if they're not wearing suits, they all have on the sweatsuits or looking nice. You know, you can't just be looking crazy when you represent, these companies, which these – or these teams are companies. But on the other part, it's just we got to do more to monitor these guys and have somebody there on the team on these different organizations that can watch these guys and see that they're getting out of hand and really try to get to them during the course of their career instead of letting it just balloon out of control. There has to be somebody in the organization that tries to help these guys out and keep them in line, because it has to be an individual team thing, because you can't monitor it if you're not in that city with them every day. So you have to have somebody there to try to help these guys, or at least try to get, like you said, all right, if I see the guy getting out of control, I'm going to sit down and talk to him and say, all right, Iverson, I know you got all this stuff going on. How about we put a percentage of this money away, and you're not going to be able to touch it till you're 50. So I don't want to see you broke down the road, and I'm gonna get the team to put this money away from you. You still gonna have plenty of money, but you're not gonna be able to touch this money till you're 50. You know, and like you said, I remember Robin. They said he had all that money deferred, and then he went and got it. So instead of he was supposed to get the 8 or 5, 6, 7, 8 million when he got older, the team only gave him like a 10% of what the money was worth because he tried to take it early. So, you know, I'm not going to let you take it early. When you put this money away, it's going to be put away. And to him, it's not going to look like a lot of money. But if you did that and let it – and then if you put it away, Paul, and let it collect interest on the money, that $10 million or $15 million by the time he's 50 will be, you know, $30, $40 million.
You're right. I mean, it's a fair point, Willie. We're going to have to leave that point right there. I mean, it was an interesting discussion and a great topic. I mean, it's sad. I mean, when you see guys, you know, coming from nothing, then getting something, and then going back to nothing. I mean, that's a sad thing. I mean, you're at the top of the world and have all the money in the world, and then you have nothing. I mean, it's sad to see individuals go through that. And hopefully, Allen Iverson, T.O. and these guys can get themselves in order financially. And also, I mean, and
how,
you brought
Paul,
up the point.
How, Paul?
I don't know.
If you got a few million in assets left, and you got $10 million out there that you got to go, that you in the hole, that you got all these mortgages and stuff, how can you get yourself in order if you're not playing ball? Hell, they couldn't keep themselves in order when they were making $7-8 million or $10-15 million a year. So how can you get yourself out the hole now? It's almost impossible. All you can do is file bankruptcy.
Well, you have some guys trying to play in the IFL like T.O. and other guys may have to go overseas like AI. And at that point, they're going to have to sell everything off. Try to sell everything off and see what they can get. So
you can't
start
over at 35. We just got to talk about starting over at 35. The T.O.'s 37, 38 years old.
Well, because of their situation, is there any other choice? They really don't have a choice at this point. I mean,
and crazy thing about T.O., you would think somebody like T.O. that was always boisterous, always in the middle of the media, wanting to be, at some point he was bigger than the NFL, would have tried to take care of his business better, because, you know, everybody's watching his every move. So,
right.
You know,
I mean,
obviously he needs to, you know, he's going to capitalize off of the situation and do as much magazines or acting or whatever he's trying to do, but Paul, it's just a sad thing. The liquid, you know, what they told me, if the liquid money in the bank, and these guys had a chance to, like myself, had a chance to put a lot of liquid cash away, just living off the interest, man. I mean, shit. It's unbelievable. That's why I said there has to be somebody that can go through these guys when they're making that kind of money and at least have them, give them the option to defer a portion of the money so they can put it away and they can't touch it. And you're not going to be able to touch it till you get 50 years old or whatever and let that money sit there from the time they've been playing, or let's say in 30, guys get above 30 in the league, and then let it collect interest and add on to while you play. And then from the time you retire, 30, 35, 36, 38 years old, that money is getting to collect interest for the next 10, 12 years.
And a fair point, Willie. We're going to leave the conversation there. It was a pleasure talking to you, man. I mean, a great discussion here. And as always, we appreciate you stopping by and giving us this insight. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.
The great Willie Rowe, newest member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame, newest enshrinee to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And he brought up a lot of interesting points. I mean, it makes you start thinking a little bit about tomorrow, and the reality is, if you saw Allen Iverson, you wondered whether or not you kind of saw this coming on some level. Sad to say, but you kind of saw it coming on some level, and it's sad. I mean, it truly is sad to see somebody, like I said before, go from the bottom to the top to the bottom again. And unfortunately, I mean, it's a sad thing. It's truly a sad story. Allen Iverson and T.O. and these guys being essentially broke in a lot of ways and not putting away the money in their careers when they should have put the money away. And that's a sad story. It really truly is. And you hope, and to Willie's point, I don't know how they can get out of it. I mean, Michael Vick was very fortunate where he kind of had his epiphany earlier in life, and it took him going to prison. It took him being in a cell to realize the error of his ways and helped him to realize that he can't live like this anymore. He's got to change some things around. It took that for him. And so
you look at a guy like Vic, and Vic was the – I mean, Vic isn't out of the woods, Paul. You got to remember, if he can get this $100 million or most $100 million out of this contract – Vic lost a lot. I mean, he's bankrupt. He's in the hole. I mean, he's playing now to hopefully be able to retire with, like you were saying, to become an Allen Iverson. He resurrected a career so that maybe, just maybe, you know, he'll be able to be okay. But an injury or another year like this year and gets cut from the Eagles and loses some money, he's going to be another statistic. I think the saddest thing in all of this is, though, that this just unfortunately seems to be the norm. Almost every week, definitely at least monthly, it just seems like we get another player who is broke again, and a big player, like a Terrell or like an Iverson, where it's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars.
And let's bring in now one of the stars of Basketball Wives for the one – the lovely, the beautiful, the talented Keisha Nichols. Keisha, how are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
Doing well. Thanks for joining us.
Of course.
And Keisha, first off, I got to ask, how did you get involved with Basketball Wives?
Well, the producers have been wanting me since the first season, but at that time I was just focused on my career and I wasn't ready to do reality TV. But when they called me for season 4, the timing was right, and I was itching to do something new and exciting.
And
so here
had
I am.
You watched, did you watch the show over the years?
I did. I watched season 1 and season 2.
Okay.
I wasn't a huge fan of season 3, though.
Okay, and that was last season. And looking at the show, and one thing I noticed, it's a lot of drama. I mean, there really is a lot of drama.
You noticed
and
that?
I did. I mean, going into the show, I mean, did you really want to be a part of something like that?
You know what? They brought me in because I'm the sweet, southern, non-confrontational girl. They just wanted to spice it up a little bit. But, you know, I'm not a fighter. I'm a dancer, and I'm just doing the best I can with those girls.
And I looked at the show. I watched the trailer the other day, and I saw you and Tammy kind of going back and forth. She was calling you out of your name. I mean, and looking at that, I mean, what's going on between you two? Is there any friction between you two?
Well, I can't give away anything from the show, but, I mean, you saw that there's friction, so you'll just have to watch and see what happens.
I was hoping you would give me something.
I can't. I mean, you saw a lot, right?
Yeah, I saw it. It seems very interesting. It seems very interesting. And I got to be honest, I watch it. I do watch Basketball Wives along with my lovely wife every week. So I'm a fan. I'm a fan of the show. I'm a fan of the drama. And Keisha, you are the former fiance of NBA star Richard Jefferson. I mean, you guys were scheduled to be married, and he called the wedding off very close to the date. And talk about that. How devastating was that for you?
Well, don't believe everything that you read. We called the wedding off 5 days before, but I mean, it was devastating at the time, but that was over 2 years ago, and I started my life over, and, you know, that story's been told many,
right,
many times.
And real quickly with that story, and we'll put it to bed after this, but you said in the interview that you guys really would not have contact after that. Have you spoken to Richard? Are you guys friendly at this point?
We were for the first year and a half, but then when I decided to do the show, I discussed it with him, and he gave me his blessing, but we decided it was best that we didn't talk during this process.
Right.
It's just easier to move on when you're not in each other's lives anymore.
And let's talk about happy things. You're in a relationship right now. Talk about that.
How do you know that?
You told me.
Yes, I am in a relationship now. I'm very, very happy. It's great.
Right, and that's a great thing. I'm happy to hear that you bounced back from. I mean, that's got to be a devastating thing, so I'm happy that you bounced back from that. We're talking to Keisha Nichols, one of the stars of Basketball Wives 4, which airs on VH1 each and every Monday, 8 o'clock Eastern time, so make sure you check it out. It's a great show. I enjoy it. I watch it all the time. And now, Keisha, I mean, you are a dancer with the New Jersey Nets and everything, and right now you're doing your thing, your own thing with a dancing company that you have. Tell us about that.
Yes, my dance company is called Sugar and Spice Productions, and we are a group of professional dancers, and we perform choreographed routines for private parties and corporate events.
Okay. And where can we find information about your company?
Our website is sugarandspicenyc.com, and you can see all of our videos on our YouTube channel. It's youtube.com/sugarandspicenewyork.
Okay. And Keisha, going back to the show now, is this show an accurate portrayal of Basketball Wives in general? I mean, do Basketball Wives act this way?
These particular Basketball Wives that you're watching, I think it's an accurate portrayal of them. But,
okay.
I mean, there's hundreds of women that are in the league, you know, either moms, wives, fiancés, girlfriends, and they all have their own unique story. And their experience is different, you know. So, yes, it's an accurate portrayal of the eight women that you see, but, you know, we can't have eight women represent hundreds, so.
True, very true. And looking at it, I mean, this whole situation, the Basketball Wives, and being a woman who dated a professional athlete, is it difficult for you to date a professional athlete from the standpoint that they go to each and every city and they have girls throwing everything at them? I mean, how difficult is that for the woman in the lives of a professional athlete?
Once you decide to date someone that is a professional athlete, especially basketball, because the season is so long and there's so many games, you pretty much dedicate your life to the NBA as well. And yes, you know, they're taller than everyone, they have more money than everyone, and they can dunk. So, of course, all the women love them, and they're always throwing themselves at them. But, you know, each guy is different, and if you have trust in your relationship, that's all that matters.
And sometimes, Keisha, I wish I could dunk. I mean, I wish I could dunk.
How tall are you?
I'm about 5'8", so I cannot dunk.
On the tramp, like me, on the trampoline.
I'll try the trampoline. I'll definitely. That's a good idea. I'll try that. I'll
it
definitely
hurts,
try
though.
That.
Dunking hurts your hands. Just a warning.
Okay, so it's kind of overrated.
Mm-hmm.
And looking at it now, Keisha, would you do reality TV again? Will you do reality TV again after this experience?
Well, my experience isn't complete yet. I'm getting used to the filming and the shooting process, but the first episode airs on Monday. So I'll be watching myself on TV for the first time, just like you will be. So I need to see how it feels and,
okay,
you know, what happens and what good things come out of being on the show before I can make any decisions about future reality stuff.
Is it kind of weird, though, and watching the trailers and everything, is it weird seeing yourself on TV like that?
Yes, it's so weird. You know, like if you're getting into it with someone or you're telling one of your friends a story, something exciting that happened, like you can actually go back and watch it. And it's, I mean, I really didn't like seeing Tammy call me a bitch or anything like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's definitely a weird experience. But like I said, I'll see it for the first time on Monday.
And in talking to you, why would she call a person? I mean, you seem so sweet. You seem so nice. Why would she do that to a person like you? I mean, you seem like you're a very nice person.
I am a very nice person. I'm very sweet, very southern, but I guess, you know, not everybody loves that. And you'll see why she calls me a bitch when you watch it.
And I will
be watching.
And then
you let me know if you agree with it or not.
I will. I'll definitely let you know. And I don't think I can agree with that, anybody being called that word. I mean, it's not nice.
Right. I mean, and I asked her nicely not to call me that, you know, but we're grown women. We can make our own decisions, so.
Right, right. Definitely, definitely. And I was on Twitter the other day, and I was looking at your timeline there, and make sure you follow her on Twitter at Keisha Nichols. And Keisha, I saw that you were doing some dancing with Pitbull and Chris Brown. Talk about that.
Yes, it was actually a very wonderful surprise. I came back from our Basketball Wives trip, and they were looking for one more dancer for Pitbull Chris Brown performance for the Premios Latin Music Awards show. And it was in Miami, and I happened to have those days available, and the show was Thursday night, and it was amazing.
Right. So you did your thing.
I did my thing. I was a dancing flight attendant.
Oh, okay, okay, okay.
You can see
you
it. It's
it
on
down.
YouTube if you look it up. It's International Love by Chris Brown and Pitbull.
Okay, and you were an NBA dancer for many, many years. How much fun was that?
Dancing for the Nets was definitely one of the highlights of my dance career. I absolutely loved it. It was so much fun. I loved the girls. And, you know, contrary to what a lot of people think, we really are there just to dance and perform because we
right.
love what we do. Half the time, we didn't even know what was going on during the game. We were just excited about our three dances every game.
And if given the opportunity, would you do it again? Down the line now?
Well, I actually think I've crossed over. I'm a little too old now,
okay.
you know, to be dancing with girls that are 18. But there's a unique opportunity coming up for the Nets' last game in Jersey. They're having all the alumni dancers come back and perform
okay.
together. So I will get to perform at a Nets game again.
Oh, wow. And that should be an exciting thing for you.
Well, actually,
time.
don't let me assume. We have to audition. All the vets have to audition to make it. So hopefully I will.
And Keisha, I think you'll be just fine. I think you'll lay it down. And
I will
looking
represent,
at it,
I promise.
I know you will. I know you will. And Keisha, on the show, we like to play a game called Who's Better. I'll give you two topics. You tell me who's better. You ready to play?
Oh, goodness. Okay. I'm
better
ready.
Better dancer, Keisha Nichols, Royce Reed.
Why does everybody ask me that? Royce and I dance together. We're not in competition.
Okay, fair enough. Better place to shop, Walmart or Target?
Well, I am a country girl, and we had Walmart. We didn't have Target. We had to drive 45 minutes to go to Target, so that was a special treat. But I do pick Target over Walmart.
Oh, Target's expensive.
Well, there's not a Target in New York. But when I go in Miami, I can spend hours in there. I love it.
Okay. McDonald's or Burger King? What's better?
Okay. Can I throw in a Wendy's?
I'll allow you to do that.
I like McDonald's more than Burger King. Wendy's is my favorite, but Chick-fil-A takes the grand prize.
Chick-fil-A is very good. But like Target, Chick-fil-A is expensive.
Chick-fil-A is not expensive. Have you ever eaten out in New York?
No. Maybe I'm just cheap.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe it's just me. It's just me. But you have successfully played the game. And again, Keisha, where can fans connect with you?
You can follow me on Twitter, Keisha Nichols. I also have a Facebook page. And go to my YouTube page and check out all of our videos.
I will. And fans, make sure you go check it out. All the great things that Keisha Nichols has to offer. Keisha, I look forward to seeing you this season on Basketball Wives 4.
Thank you so much. I'm excited and anxious all at the same time.
Keisha, it was a pleasure having you. We wish you nothing but the best of luck in all that you do. And let's do this again.
Okay. Let me know when.
All right. Keisha Nichols, one of the stars of Basketball Wives 4, which airs on VH1 each and every Monday, 8 o'clock Eastern time. I'm looking forward to it. Jeremy, are you going to watch?
Paul, I wouldn't bet on that. I can't say I won't, because my wife and you and Alicia have the same taste in TV. But if it was up to me, I have children to raise and youth to mentor. I don't know that Basketball Wives fits either one of those criteria.
You sure?
Well, I mean, I could be wrong. Not that there's anything wrong with watching television. I guess if I were to, again, I'm a mentor here. I'm trying to raise the level of our youth. I don't know. That's something maybe we'll defer to Teacher Paul. You're out there educating America.
I'm a radio talk show host, That's what I do. The reality is.
I like
Basketball Wives 4. I mean, it's a guilty pleasure. I mean, I do like the drama. It's a good bonding experience with me and my wife to be able to watch Basketball Wives 4 and enjoy Basketball Wives 4 and enjoy some of the great things that is on Basketball Wives 4. I mean,
I
enjoy
it. Can't you bond in church, though, Paul? I mean, I've heard this before. Couldn't one argue that you may be able to bond over a church service?
And you can do that as well. You can do that. I mean, everybody has those guilty pleasures. Reality TV is one of my guilty pleasures. I enjoy watching it, and I enjoy watching Basketball Wives 4, and I'm going to be watching.
I will be watching each and every Monday,
8 o'clock Eastern time on VH1. Each and every Monday I will be watching, and hopefully you'll be watching as well.
But Paul, we got to know the NFL players. Let's get to know you a little bit here. So what's another guilty pleasure? We know Basketball Wives. Obviously we know food is at your ever expanding waistline. So you have
football. Football Wives, Real Housewives of Atlanta, guilty pleasures. We all have them. It is what it is. We all have them. We all have them. We all have those guilty pleasures.
Quick hitter here. We're hitting up against the deadline now. I want to disclaim, moving forward, we're never going to use Jeremy Espy, New York Jets, Mark Sanchez, and liking in the same phrases anymore. I denounce Mark Sanchez, denounced the New York Jets. I used to be fans, well documented, but the fact that we're twittering back and forth between Sanchez Mark, it made me ill. Seeing the fact that these two losers couldn't get it right during the season on the field, and now we want to be each other's Valentine's, that was it. He's not a quarterback in the NFL. If you need another man to be your Valentine, you do not belong as a quarterback in the NFL.
Well, I mean, the way I look at it, he's throwing him a little olive branch. The reality is Santonio Holmes is coming back. He's got his guaranteed $15.75 million. He's coming back. The reality is, so you got to make peace with him. You have no choice. It was an opportunity for him to make peace. He made peace on Twitter, and maybe that can start something good for the New York Jets. Sanchez needs Santonio Holmes just as much as Santonio Holmes needs Mark Sanchez. They need each other. So they're married to each other, at least for next season. And so they have to make good and do good and hopefully be on the same page if you're a New York Jets fan. But like I said, and as I said on the show numerous times, the New York Jets will never win a Super Bowl with Mark Sanchez as their quarterback. And the way everything is looking, that prediction and that statement is looking very, very, very good at this point. And we want to thank Andrew Dacko of Florida State for stopping by. As he prepares for the upcoming NFL draft, we wish him nothing but the best of luck. We want to thank Matt Blanchard from Wisconsin Whitewater as he prepares for the NFL draft. Again, we wish him nothing but the best of luck. And we also want to thank Willie Rofe, the newest member of the Hall of Fame, newest enshrinee to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And also we want to thank Keisha Nichols, Basketball Wives, for it. Make sure you check it out each and every Monday, 8 o'clock Eastern time, or H1. Good show, good times. Make sure you check it out. For Jeremy Espy and everybody here at Go For It, we hope you have a nice week and a nice day. See you later.